the first pick.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Who is the number one guy in this draft? Doesn't matter position atop your board, Todd.
Bryce Young.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
He's a smaller version of Patrick Mahomes.
Earlier on the show, NFL Network analyst Daniel Jeremiah, Bears head coach Matt Eberflus. Coming up, Emmy-nominated actress Rae Seahorn, actor Matt Barr. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
That's correct, can confirm, and the Roku channel stream shows. There it is. Oh, I just refer to myself as it. Here I am. I'm sitting here at my desk here in Los Angeles, California. After the show's over, I'm going to Indianapolis, Indiana for the NFL Network's coverage of the Scouting Combine, the least well-rounded event on the NFL calendar. There's nothing well-rounded about it at all. It's just guys in shorts running straight lines, jumping in the air, and then there's interviews, and there's, you know, testing and medical exams, and a lot of head coaches and general managers are there. We just chatted with Matt Eberflus, the coach of the Chicago Bears, who basically said all options are on the table at the quarterback position. They love Justin Fields, but they got due diligence. He said, yes, we're talking to Bryce Young this week. Yes, we're talking to C.J. Stroud this week. If you missed it, don't worry. The show re-airs as soon as it's over. And we got 2 hours left here on the Roku channel, so we're live on the Roku channel, which is free and also available on all Amazon Fire TVs. It's available on select Samsung smart TVs. It's available on the Roku app, which has the Roku channel free within it, therokuchannel.com for those using the old internet tubes. It's free there as well. We chatted with Daniel Jeremiah, my colleague from the NFL Network. We're going to be talking nonstop about all these prospects coming in from all across the football landscape. Defensive linemen coming up with the linebackers on Thursday night. It's a long first night. Then the defensive backs on Friday night. Quarterbacks and wideouts on Saturday. Tight ends and running backs on Sunday. And then I'll be back here on Monday. Tomorrow, Susie Schuster, my
wife.
No, stop it, because she doesn't like it when you do the Borat thing.
But she's not here.
My betrothed.
Your wife.
My wife.
Will be here sitting in for me tomorrow.
Mimosa Wednesday.
And then Bobby Bones. Yeah, she's going to be bringing.
Let's go.
She'll be bringing the alcohol.
We love it when Susie
Bobby goes. Bones Thursday and Friday.
Bobby Bones.
Then I'll be back here Monday. That's the way we're rolling.
Rich, it's going to be 70 tomorrow in Indianapolis.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Great. I'll walk to
I'm
work.
Saying nice weather.
I'll walk to work. Normally take the tunnels and the catacombs or whatever there in Indianapolis.
Nice weather tomorrow.
Hey, how's the weather out there?
Thank you. Matt Barr from CW, Walker Independence, will be joining us in studio in hour number three. And look, we've been on the air here for 8+ years. Can you believe we're turning 9 this fall? Can you believe it?
No, I can't.
Okay. Our first in-studio guest, first ever in-studio guest, was Vince Gilligan.
Day one.
And it was right as Breaking Bad was ending, and he gave us a little extra time because he had to leave the writer's room for his new show called Better Call Saul. Yep. And we've had Giancarlo Esposito here, and we've had Bryan Cranston here multiple times. And so, as you know, we have been into the Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul oeuvre. Jonathan Banks called in, cursed his head off. Patrick Fabian, who plays Howard Hamlin, has been here in studio. Michael McKeon called in. Bob Odenkirk we've had on this program as well. When we found out last night that we were having Rae Seahorn, who was nominated for her role multiple times as Kim Wexler, you like texted the group. Chris, you don't ever really do that.
No, because I was watching a show last night, and I was like getting ready for bed.
The show being the Celtics losing to the Knicks, or is it a different show?
Wow, without Jaylen Brown, I mean,
okay,
you're going to count that. And I was just checking.
It's like Better Call Saul without Rae Seahorn.
Checking the show email. I was like, oh, holy yes,
there we
let's go.
Here we go. Let's ride.
I got a Walter White Heisenberg piece
very
of
good.
Art right here. That
well,
said
I mean,
every day,
I don't think she actually her character was the one with Aaron Paul, Jesse Pinkman. That was the right. What a choice that was. Let's connect those two characters together in Better Call Saul. At any rate, we love that show and the new movie Linoleum. Jim Gaffigan, another friend of the show. Him in. The cast includes Jim Gaffigan, Tony Shalhoub, Michael Ian Black. They've all been on this program. Michael Ian Black, a two-time Super Bowl champion through 7 years of his NFL career. If you see on his bio of Twitter.
I did not know.
Two rings, not 9 years, two rings or something like that. Whatever. Anyway, Ray is in studio coming up in just about 15 minutes time. We're all excited. So clear your workspaces. And then in hour number three, when Matt Barr comes in, yet another difficult two-shot for the kid. He's a handsome guy. Kind of like Brandon Sklenar, who was here from Friday from 1923. And you're now seeing his work for the first time, TJ.
Yeah, I started it, like I said, I for whatever reason, I didn't think I'd be into 1883.
And then you did.
Brockman kept trying to get me to watch it, and I powered through it. And then I started 1923.
And now you're off.
There's a couple scenes in there that made it tough. But
yeah, I know.
Brandon, he's amazing.
Very good.
He's great in it.
Speaking of roughing it, Aaron Rodgers still is. And
still in the hole?
Well, I mean, he is,
we haven't heard from him.
Nobody knows. He wasn't even on Pat's show yesterday, right?
Well, today's Tuesday.
Oh, okay. So maybe he'll show up on Pat's show and
I don't know.
See his shadow, or it'll be longer winter for Green Bay because he hasn't given an answer yet.
Man, that was cold blooded.
And so we haven't used that Gus Johnson drop in a while.
It's
the truth, though.
We're all waiting.
We are waiting.
And it's not just we in the media. It's teams that are looking for quarterbacks who happen to be first ballot great, you know, who may just be available to help you win a championship in his remaining years of window of greatness. But apparently there's other stuff that comes with Aaron Rodgers, as is evidenced by him not responding to the Packers yet. And before we play the soundbite from Brian Gutekunst, the general manager of the Packers, who spoke not at a podium but locally to reporters, and or he spoke to the local beat writers and reporters of the Wisconsin World, and maybe some other interested national folks who might be interested, you know, New York writers who are interested, if the Jets are interested in Aaron Rodgers, and so on and so forth. Just understand this. In advance, the fact that Rodgers hasn't told Brian Gutekunst anything yet, significant yet, he's not anywhere near the drama of Brett Favre from back in the day when Rodgers was the Jordan Love in this equation, waiting for his chance. Not at all. Just think, if Rodgers was not telling anything to Gutekunst by March 28th, then he'd be entering the Favre era. And then him then saying, I'm retired, and coming back and saying, I want to come back to the Packers on June 28th. Now he's entered Favre territory. So I front load that when we now listen to Brian Gutekunst talk about the latest between the Packers and Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, really no updates. You know, again, I think, like I was talking earlier, haven't had the conversations that we need to have yet, so really no update. But looking forward here to being an MD and look at these prospects and trying to help this football team.
Who initiates when those conversations will take place with Aaron?
Yeah, there's been some contact back and forth. Obviously, he's had some things on his plate, but hopefully those things will happen soon.
Do you want him back as the quarterback of the Packers?
Mm. Yeah, I think, you know, those discussions have to happen and making sure that it's the right fit. But obviously we know the kind of player that Aaron is. And, you know, once we have those conversations, we'll be able to move forward. We'll have more to say.
Now the words, the right fit.
Yeah, he's not coming back.
Jump out at you and just hit you over the head.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers not the right fit for the Green Bay Packers? Really? What does that mean? And I asked this of Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated yesterday, and I'm going to ask it of everybody until we get an answer here. Because you hear all the time, Rodgers, the Packers need to know if he's all in. And I asked Breer, what does that mean? Because when they need him to hear that he's all in, how was he not all in last year? Because he wasn't at all the offseason workouts? You know, he didn't have like a Rodgers mini camp of his own with the young kids who just got drafted. And don't listen to all that stuff about how he's estranged from a lot of the locker room. Favre went through the same thing. Because guess what? The kids in that locker room are literally half his age. What's he going to talk to him about? New TikToks? Seriously. What's he going to talk to him about? Hey, want to make a TikTok?
Call of Duty?
Hey, Aaron, we're making TikToks over here. You want to join us? Seriously.
Christian Watson is 23.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, there's not much in common here. So that might be what he's talking about, too. So don't make it seem like Rodgers is the a-hole that won't fit in the square peg hole. It may just be we're a young team. Jordan will be the guy here.
He loves TikTok.
He want a TikTok? Hello, fellow youths. Who wants to TikTok today? You know, I mean, so that's maybe what he's talking about, too. Right fit. Jordan Love may be the right fit because that's a 23-year-old. That's a 22-year-old. That's this guy who's growing up. And Rodgers may be, you know what? I'm done with the child care. I want to go someplace where there's a grown-ass man named Davante Adams. Or I want to go to a spot where, you know,
was a grown-ass man named Mike Evans.
So, you know, or Derrick Henry. I don't know. I mean, like, so let's just, you know, bide our time a little bit more because there is time. The new league year begins 2 weeks from tomorrow. The, what's it called again? Negotiating window?
It's the
negotiating period.
Ah, that begins 2 weeks from yesterday. So
I printed that out for you.
There's time. There's time. He could even go, you know, in the dark again for 3-4 more days and still.
Hello, darkness, my old.
Now, I understand the Packers want an answer. I would too. Like, just ask Jerry, agent to the stars. When I'm waiting to find something, I'm like Mona Lisa Vito. My clock is ticking. You know, when I'm trying to make a business deal for this show and everything else, I'm like, let's go. So I understand the Packers want to know, certainly when they're walking around and evaluating talent and what direction are they going to go in, and maybe, just maybe, they're hoping Rodgers comes out and says, I don't want to play anymore. Well, or for you, or I want to go somewhere else, send me somewhere else. And you start Jordan Love's tenure. Like, this is the way I'm reading it all here. And, you know, I think people are going to be like, the right fit. How is Rodgers not the right fit? He may not be the right fit anymore. Maybe it. And I do speak to some fans that are like, we're done. We're done. The sky caves and the and everything else that he's saying, we're done. Yeah. He's making us wait. And it's like, again, this is not even remotely close to Favre.
Got some time for
that. Oh, my goodness. He hasn't given an answer yet. I'm a little surprised by that. I mean, but it's not like he's gone radio silent, so. We're going to find out, and I can't wait to get to Indianapolis. I am going to hear all sorts of insane things.
All the tea is going to be spilled there, Rich.
Oh,
man. It's going to be like the Boston Tea Party there.
Start a burner Twitter, okay?
Yeah, and just...
Okay. And then to text it to me, and then I'll just hit it with retweets, yeah. But it'll be like a wink-wink that we know that you're telling us what's going on.
At B. Colangelo?
No, overheard at the Combine.
It's an old-school NBA reference.
Nice.
Thank you.
I don't like that one either. But.
Sorry.
I ruined his team.
Sorry.
Sure. The process.
Overheard at Combine. And then just like, you hit me. I'll just like subtly retweet it.
Could you imagine I do something like that? How stupid could I be?
Well, you wouldn't be doing it.
You're not doing it.
You would technically be deep throat.
You know what I'm going to do instead? I'm just going to go take a nap. Because I got three kids. And I'm honestly... There's three things I'm going to do at the combine. I'm going to work my ass off.
Sleep in?
Not work
I'm gonna,
out.
I'm going to, on occasion, have a glass of red at night.
Oh, that's mandatory.
And then, whenever possible, go to sleep. I'm going to create my own little darkness cave in whatever hotel room I've got. And it's just going to be like, I want blackout curtains.
You want a hack for that?
Oh, I got like some eye pillows.
Hey, eye pillows. Oh, yeah. Take the curtains. You know,
good
the,
night. My left eye is twitching having this conversation.
You know the hangers in hotel rooms that have the little hooks on it for your pants?
Yeah.
You take those and you put the curtains together and you use those to make it shut. And that's how no light seeps.
You didn't know that?
I'm in. I got it. Oh, gosh. So that's my plan.
Okay.
For the NFL Network's coverage.
You can text me things you hear, and I'll just hit it from one of my burners.
And that's my take on Aaron Rodgers. From soup to absolutely nuts.
Soup to nuts.
Okay.
Boom, put that on a t-shirt.
Let's take a break, and let's bring out, I cannot wait to meet her and have a chat. Rae Seahorn. She's in the new movie with Jim Gaffigan called Linoleum. We can welcome her to the Roku channel and more when we come back.
Have you noticed how a lot of insurance commercials are kind of gimmicky? They've got jingles and mascots, and they try to be real cute and clever. But really what matters, in fact, it's the only thing that matters, is the insurance, which is why I want to tell you about NJM. Because for over 100 years, NJM has been going about their business protecting their clients' biggest investments, their homes and their cars, with award-winning customer service. The most important thing is knowing you have the right coverage with a company you can rely on when you need them. And that's NJM. When you apply for an auto, home, or renter's policy, NJM will work with you to ensure you get the coverage that's just right for you. And when you upgrade to NJM, you could save real money on your auto insurance. Better service and possible savings. No jingles, no mascots, just great insurance. NJM. Visit njm.com/podcast for a quote to see how much you could save on your auto insurance. njm.com/podcast.
For decades, Rolling Stone has set the bar for entertainment publications. Today, Rolling Stone Music Now takes over in podcast form.
SZA. You seem like a person with a pretty high level of anxiety, but you also seem fearless artistically.
I feel like ideas have more power than identity. Like the excitement overrides insecurity. That is the only way that I'm ever able to accomplish anything.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
Back here on our radio show, we're here with the great Rae Seahorn. We just saw a clip of Linoleum in select theaters near you. Two things. First things first, we've got to get your characters a more reliable man. One's building a rocket ship in a garage.
It's true.
Another one is, well, we all know what Jimmy did. But let's talk Linoleum here with you.
And maybe I should only ever work with leading men that are great comedic actors, and you didn't know what else they could do.
That's correct. that's another theme right here. That is, or you bring it out of them. I mean,
I doubt that. But.
So let's talk about this new movie that you're in with Jim Gaffigan. Michael Ian Black is in the cast. Tony Shalhoub, a terrific cast. And I want to, if you will, to use a phrase from Another World, tread lightly here,
right?
Because there's. I'll give you the floor on what the movie's about, because I don't want to give anything away. There's many layers to this film. So
you're going to make me say it?
Yeah.
Well, there's another comparison with Saul, right? I think I'm destined to talk about shows where I'm not allowed to say anything.
That's well, then we'll talk about your next project as well with Vince Gilligan.
I think I can say less about that.
Right.
It is hard to describe, and you've seen it, and so you know why. And I was just talking to Liz here that it's, there are definitely some non-linear narrative plot lines that you may feel like you're not sure what's happening, and there is some satisfaction to how they add up. But in my experience, it's actually better to just let go of trying to add it up and let those last 15 minutes find you wherever you are. Because I've been around quite a few people watching screenings now, and I know I'm not summing this up well, but it is about... it's about the chapters of life we go through. Mm-hmm. There is a sci-fi element. There is a dark comedy element. But it's a love story about trying to get through this life with your partner and the different roles that we have to take on to get there.
And it's in select theaters near you right now. Linoleum, you and Jim Gaffigan, who is, I love that guy.
I love him. I love him. And Jeannie, his wife and his kids.
That's right.
We were shooting in upstate New York, height of the pandemic, pre-vaccine, in a little Best Western bubble.
Yeah.
But on the weekends, I couldn't fly home to LA, so I would stay with Jeannie and Jim and his kids.
So you were a Gaffigan. You were an,
I was a Gaffigan.
You were an official Gaffigan for a while.
Yeah, I also like forced Bob Odenkirk and Patrick Fabian's families to adopt me, and the three of us lived together when we were shooting. That's my jam.
That's your jam. Is just to go into these shoots and do all that stuff. I mean, we've had Patrick here on the show.
He's so great. He said to tell you something about he got to do the twin towel. The terror towel?
Oh, the terrible towel, yes.
Is that a thing?
Yes, he's a diehard.
Okay. I'm so afraid I'm going to be asked a sports question.
Don't worry about it. Now, by the way, do you ever see the movie Diner? You ever see that movie?
Oh, okay.
This is not that. Like, we're not going to quiz you, you know, and then you're allowed to come out of the room when you've passed enough. Like, that's not the way
it's on constantly in my house.
There you go.
See, every sport there is.
Is that right?
Because of my two boys and grandma.
So what sports are on in your house?
Every sport.
Okay. Did you watch the Super Bowl?
Everything New York
first. Did you catch the Super Bowl?
It was on.
Okay.
It was on.
I love it. So New York, it's a New York sports
household? Yeah, my fiance, Graham Larson, is a New Yorker. The boys were born here.
Okay.
I'm stepmom. I'm from the East Coast, but he's made the boys believe they're New Yorkers. I think they actually are from New York.
But you grew up all over the place, right?
Yeah, I did. D.C. and where else? Japan, Virginia, Arizona.
Yeah, that's all over the place.
Kind of.
That's pretty nice. Yeah, so it's tough to, you know, land in one spot sports-wise. So you've adopted the New York sports scene.
Oh, that's why. Scene. Okay, yes.
That's it. See, that's absolutely right. But the New York sports scene has adopted you in passing is the way to put it right there.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm from New York City myself. So
you
that's
are?
My, yeah, that's my scene. That's
nice.
My scene for sure.
I love New York.
So
it's
do I.
My favorite place.
So let's just jump into the Kim Wexler character, if you don't mind.
Sure.
How were you introduced to her? How did that get introduced?
I actually came and read for it. Vince and Peter were already down in Albuquerque scouting.
Mm-hmm.
I knew Breaking Bad very well, and Sharon Bialy, Sherry Thomas, Russell Scott of Bialy Thomas Casting that I've been in for years and years and years and years. And I was doing sitcoms. When I was doing theater back East Coast, I did drama and comedy. But once I came out with a sitcom, that's kind of where you get put.
Mm-hmm.
But Bialy Thomas Casting had been calling him in for a lot of dramas for years. And so they thought that I was a good fit for the role and sent tapes to Vince and Peter. And we went through that process. And then I did a chemistry read with Bob. And then came on the show. But
boom.
I knew very little about the character.
Right. So
very, very little.
And so did we, obviously, as viewers.
And so did they told me.
Is that right?
Yeah, it was not sort of planned out. There was a lot of elements that changed. Michael McKean, the great Michael McKean playing Chuck, he was at one time supposed to be the thing that made you see the soft side of Jimmy. Jimmy was going to become Saul right away, I believe, within the first season.
Yeah.
And
is that right?
Chuck was going to be this sort of invalid that had to be taken care of. But Michael McKean played it with such gravitas and such so much complexity and subtext that they were like, oh, I think this is a formidable foe. And then Patrick Fabian playing Howard came in, and there was this complexity the way he was like, it's easy to project onto him that he's one simple thing, but he was playing it with more. Excuse me, I hit your mic. And then I was in these scenes where she says very little, but is constantly present and observing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, not speaking in a room can be a position of weakness or a position of power. And I find the latter more interesting. So we all were kind of coming at our characters that way. And things got jostled around. And suddenly Michael McKean's was the foe. And I was his heart. And Howard was the person that Jimmy was projecting everything onto who doesn't deserve it. It was interesting.
It is fascinating to me. Because obviously, as fans of Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, the fan base ascribes to Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould the belief that they've got it all mapped out from beginning to the very end. And they fully admit that is not the case.
Not the case.
It's
and
a
you,
journey
I know
for
you've
them
had
as
Vince
well.
On here, and I don't know if you've had Peter, but it fascinates me. Even when I did the podcast that we would do, I just couldn't believe it. I kept like quizzing them. Like
you were
had
learning
to
stuff?
Know the stuffed. Yeah, I was like, you had to know the stuffed animal. Why the stuffed animal was floating in the pool?
Yeah.
I don't believe that was
with
like
one
a
eye.
Deep plant.
Right.
Yeah, and they were like, well, no, we knew it fell out of the sky. we weren't sure why. And then we got around to, you know, Jessica's character dying. Kristen Ritter's character dying. Jesse's girlfriend is what I meant to say. And we're like, oh, maybe her dad flies a plane. And I'm just like, I don't know how you didn't piece this together. And I'm sure they told you that Saul Goodman wasn't going to exist, except that Jonathan Banks was not available. Sorry, I said it backwards. Bob was not available for Saul Goodman to clean up mm-hmm. her body. And so the Mike Ehrmantraut character was created.
That is actually news to me and us, right? I did not know that.
Isn't that crazy?
Say that one more time.
So when she dies, when she chokes on her own vomit, one of the best episodes ever.
This is Kristen Ritter.
Kristen Ritter.
By the way,
her name in it is what? The character.
You can look that up, Chris. We've had, if you don't mind, we've had Bryan Cranston here multiple times. He said so that's one of the toughest scenes he's ever had to do.
Had to be.
Is watching that character, Kristen yes. Ritter's character, choke because he thought of his own daughter.
Horrible. It's
right?
Horrible.
He said that about that scene.
Yeah. He writes Jane. About it in his autobiography is great.
Right.
We
have it actually. It's so side copy right there.
He talks about that scene and how originally he was supposed to actively strangle her. I forget. Like he was supposed to be more active instead of passively just not turning her body.
Yeah.
Oh, I think he was supposed to turn her on her back. And instead of just not helping.
Yeah, just watching it
And there's
happen.
Something more insidious in that moment because, I guess because of what Peter and Vince do so well and all the writers on that show where they make sure the lines that you're crossing are a little at a time. So that by the time somebody is in a horrible position, you're like, oh, I would never do that. But you might have done step one. You might have just cheated on your taxes. You might have not put a note on that person's car that you had, you know, it's just like they make these steps. Obviously passively letting somebody choke on their vomit is a big step, but
yes.
Anyway, what I was saying is that
rather than, you know, leaving out a receipt on your taxes, nobody understands
so
what you're saying.
So I asked Vincent Peter in one of the podcasts, I go, okay, I know you guys just like to say that you didn't like map it all out, but, you would have to know if you have guest stars, whether or not they can come back. How do you write a story if somebody might not be available? And they said, funny, you should ask that. Bob, I think maybe Bob was shooting Alexander Payne's Nebraska, maybe at the time, but he was shooting something and they wrote when Kristen's character dies that he comes and cleans up the body in this very cold, unfeeling manner. And that was going to be where his character started to go.
Mm-hmm.
And he was simply not available. So they made up the Mike Ehrmantraut character.
Oh, thank goodness.
Thank goodness.
Right.
And Jonathan Banks played it. And now it's like, you know, invaluable to the show, that character. And also, like, I'm so glad that that's not how we saw Saul. That would have forever changed how we saw him as well.
Ray Sehorn here on the Rich Eisen Show. Again, Linoleum in select theaters and her new movie. And I don't mean to talk about you like you're not sitting here. So let me just get right back to what you just, we just had a conversation about Bryan Cranston and him being here and him conjuring up a vision of his own daughter as he's watching a character, you know, Jesse Pinkman's girlfriend, Jane, Kristen Ritter, choke.
She's so great.
So where did you find the emotion for the second to last episode? We talked about it with Vince on the show. You were even, you even saw it on Twitter. You tweeted back at the show, which we were all delighted about, is that you playing your character, Kim Wexler, in the second to last episode, fittingly called Waterworks, a Better Call Saul. Your character has just come clean to Howard Hamlin's widow in the form of an affidavit. You've now come clean to a court on everything that you've done in the history of the program. And you're now flying back to your new life in Florida on a bus in an airport.
Mm-hmm.
And you break down crying. Where do you, what were you thinking? Like, what, where do you find that? Right.
I started with like emotionally what might be going on, but in the end you need to know how to do your job at 3 o'clock in the morning for multiple takes, freezing cold at the Albuquerque airport. Luckily I have the most supportive family and Vince Gilligan, who's a dear friend and I admire him so much, looking on and encouraging me. But at the end of the day, I felt like I truly understood what Kim would be grieving in that moment. And it is not just what happened that day. It's the loss of this relationship, the loss of herself, the loss of the man she knew Jimmy could be, fear for him, fear for herself. She might go to jail. She doesn't know at that point. It's a true tragedy. And the questions that they had throughout the whole show of like, who are we innately versus who are we because of the people we come into contact with? The summary of your experience, like all of those things, they felt tragic to me. And then I placed different things in my body. I think we've all been in public when we were going to fall apart.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's an old phrase that people use too much, but your job is to play against. That's why it's interesting.
What do you mean?
You fight to not cry because that's what we do when we're in public. Nobody like wants to bawl in front of a tram of strangers.
Yeah, returning a rental car.
Yeah, returning a rental car. But I went in thinking these things, and by the time you sit on that bus with the lump in your throat, which we've all had before, if you try to swallow it hard enough, it will fight you. It will fight you back, and that's what ended up making me. And then just I felt everything. I felt everything of following this woman and this relationship for 7 years.
Yeah, and just the, you know how you shake your head. It's just that's what got me to start because I have done had similar moments where you just like did that really happen?
Yeah.
You know, like that's that's what was so believable. Obviously, your emotions. But
yeah,
what,
how did we get here? How did I get here? And also please don't come out right now. Like that's the other like save it, suck right. it up. You've been sucking it up for 7 years and you can still suck it up. And I told Vince, I was like, I'm afraid to like, it's always more interesting to fight not to cry. Are we sure we really want him to cry? And he was like, Ray. And Peter said the same thing. He's like, Kim has kept her shit together for 6 seasons.
Yeah.
She's allowed to fall apart.
Yeah. I mean, as I pointed out, even like your hair was always in a tight, ponytail.
Yep.
So, but what you just said though, Ray Sehorn here on the Rich Eisen Show, what you just said though, is that, you know, she lost herself.
Yeah.
But did she really, though? Because it seems that, you know, part of her was...
She's still in there.
Yes. And the way that things ended, spoiler alert, it did kind of, when you visited Jimmy in prison, it did seem like, you know, you kind of scammed your way in there.
Yeah.
And it seems like, you know, that you're... The losing yourself is the character in Florida. With the schmo,
absolutely.
With the schmo you're shacked up with, absolutely. Or you're with, you know, with mayonnaise for as a side, like, and it's just, you know, you're
there's
you're,
nothing wrong.
You're writing
with that
for Sprinkle.
Her life.
No. I'm not saying that's wrong. Just compared to the living on the edge of what you had,
which is also the trap. I mean, people are watching that, knowing the Kim that she was.
Right.
You know, it's one of those. Things like I'm up late at night thinking like, who are all the authors we'll never read? Who are the paintings? What are the paintings we'll never see? There's there's people like working at the grocery store that are beautiful poets.
Yes.
So there's nothing wrong with her life. The tragedy is that you know what she's capable of and you hope she has those opportunities again.
So where is she today?
I am a hopeless romantic, so even though I know that the series, Peter nailed the ending as far as like, he's like, I want their lives to live on and for them to continue to have questions, the audience.
Yes.
And I said, well, I think you did that. I said, but I'm a hopeless romantic, so if anyone asks me, I'm going to say she definitely tries to figure out how to reduce his sentence. I don't think she scams. And we did have, you know when he does finger guns?
Yes.
We shot me giving them back.
Mm-hmm.
Kim, yeah, and they took it out. And at first
What's
I was
up with that?
Sad. At first I was really sad. And then, Peter said, and Vince said, well, it was important to us that it not look like she just went right back. Her car, you know, car tire just went right back into the rut.
Yes.
She is different. She is changed forever.
Yes.
And she truly might get back into practicing law and figure out how to do something about this, but it won't be by scamming this time.
So you reduce his sentence and what, are you living together?
I don't know. Conjugal
like, do
visits.
Think?
I don't know. I know.
You know what I mean?
She like, can't stay with Glenn and just do puzzles with no pictures on them. I do jigsaw puzzles. And
so
I,
do I.
When I read in the script that she's doing one with no picture, I was like, oh, he hasn't decided because he's very particular, as you know, in the most beautiful way.
Yes.
I was like, oh, it's a placeholder. He hasn't decided. And then I got there. It was legit just a blue puzzle with no. I was like, that's maniacal. She's lost.
Yeah. I mean, how do you do a puzzle with no pictures on it? I mean, that's.
No.
That's nuts.
People do with them.
Okay.
People do them.
All right.
And then they kill people. Sorry. I'm not going to get any free puzzles out
spoiler
of this.
Spoiler alert. My goodness, Ray. No, but hey, it is just, I mean, what a world.
Did he tell you we weren't in Florida either for any of that? We were in Albuquerque and it was freezing.
Really? Okay.
Walking around the yard in like a little skirt.
Like in Florida?
Chewing ice so your breath doesn't show.
My gosh. Here I thought your most impressive acting was on that bus returning your rental car.
It's not. It's about the countdown before they say action, and you and all the wonderful gals playing my friends, we would look at each other and we would say, shoulders down on 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Right. Because you're like...
Oh, my God.
It doesn't matter. It's a joy. Everything on that set's a joy.
Of course. I mean, so your favorite scene with you or Jimmy or you and whomever, you and Patrick, I don't... I mean to put you on the spot, but I'm just doing it, and I'm going to tap dance
favorite
a little longer.
That's impossible.
Well, I mean, just for your character, for your moment that you look back on, you're like, that was it.
That's impossible. I loved, is this season 3? I loved like yelling at Patrick, yelling at Hamlin, or when he wants to tell Jimmy that that Chuck left him nothing.
Uh-huh.
I also loved my stairwell scene with all the montage post-its. That's the first time they gave me a story like alone, and it was so great.
Okay, that's great.
I love all my quiet scenes with Bob the most. We have explosive scenes that were very, very hard and very, very challenging, but yes. When we would do stuff like laughing at the same joke or brushing our teeth or watching a movie or eating Chinese food, we developed this respect with each other and mm-hmm. each other's work so much that nothing could be said without hanging. It was a real volleyball match, which I believe is what people are seeing when they say there's chemistry. It's when there's an invisible tether between the two that it does not matter if you planned your performance in your trailer to the teeth.
Yes.
It cannot be the same until you find out what your scene partner is going to do. And I just loved every pitch he threw me.
I love it. And then, you know, the choice that they made to connect your character with Jesse Pinkman.
So fun.
Because your character, again, and that's what kind of got us on pins and needles watching this is we didn't see you in Breaking Bad. We did not. So we had no idea how your character was going to wind up.
Me neither.
At all, right?
Nothing.
Were you like getting scripts thinking, looking to see if you were wound up?
Didn't Patrick tell you? That's all we would do. Because he and I are cut from the same, I wouldn't even say self-deprecating, I'll say self-loathing cloth. And like we were like constantly flipping, going like, I'm not dead. At least I'm not dead. I don't care what I'm doing. At least I'm not dead. I live another day.
You even thanked Vince for Kim not being.
Every single week it was a thing on the podcast and every recap you would read is just like, thank God Kim lives another week.
Because again, and also because you're the one who actually, you know, broke good, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and
in so a way,
everybody broke bad and then never broke good. And we were kind of rooting for you to do that and take Saul Goodman with you.
Yeah.
That's the way I was watching this entire show, this slow burn. And that's the way I was watching it.
Which, how genius is it that they made you wish that when you already actually know the outcome?
Exactly.
You already know he's not going to be okay.
Well, I mean, and that's one of the many brilliant parts about it is, but to hook you up with Aaron Paul and Jesse Pinkman, just before I let you go, what was that scene like for you to be, I guess,
so great.
To be in Breaking Bad in a way?
I didn't know. I knew those guys were coming. I was just going to pretend like I had stuff to do that week so that I could stay in town and go, hey, I've met them both and they're so, so lovely and generous. But I didn't think I'd have a scene with them. And then because of the location of the front of that office, that strip mall, and Aaron and Brian's schedules and, you know, coordinating all of that and getting them into town under deep cover and all this stuff, we had to shoot the scenes out of order. And I had to shoot that scene well before that episode. So I didn't even know that they get divorced. And they're like, and she's carrying her divorce papers. And I was like, what?
Oh, really?
What's happening? And and they did have, when we were saying earlier that they don't plan everything out, because of COVID, they had written their scripts much more further along than mm-hmm. we normally have, as well as we knew it was a finale. So there were mileposts that had to be hit. I mean, Peter had to hit so many different storylines from the Breaking Bad world and from the Better Call Saul world.
Yeah.
So I generally don't want to know too much ahead of time because my RAM space is full with the job I'm doing at hand. But I did call Peter and was like, clearly you have to tell me a little bit. What happened? What was I doing? I had never seen the front of Saul Goodman's office in that era. So I was like, what am I doing there? What's happening? And he told me exactly what I needed to know to play this scene, which had less to do with what is this interaction with Aaron Paul's character. That's for the audience to sort of wonder about the mystery of. But he told me what the scene was that was inside, which we did not shoot until much later. The scene where she comes back to get the divorce papers signed. And when you ask about like the bus scene, like, what do you think about when you're doing that? That's one of those scenes where I've never been divorced. I hope I don't have to go through that. But I was like, oh, we've all been there where you were deeply in love with someone and then you show up at a party and they act like it wasn't a big deal. And you think like you're both going to be like, oh, this is hard, isn't it? And they're like, no, it's not. Nope. Haven't even thought about you in years. And I knew Bob was going to play it that way. And so it made me want to throw up. So that's how I played the beginning of the scene.
Well, you nailed
it. I was like trying to smoke and I was like, I'm going to throw up.
Well, you stuck the landing, right? I mean, just like you did. So,
See Linoleum, though.
I know that. I was going to say, what's next? Linoleum in theaters, select theaters, and then what's going on with your...
That doesn't mean I'm not proud of Better Call Saul.
No,
I hope I never have to stop talking about Better Call Saul.
No, no. So what's next? the next project with Vince. Can you tell me anything about it other than Apple's involved? What else? What else? Have you started?
He told me that he's had these ideas brewing. They have nothing to do with Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul world.
Right.
And he was trying to figure out how to make them work and how to get them to gel together. And that sometime during our show, I don't know when, that he was like, he was talking to me. He said, it should be you. And I realized like, and then I wrote it for you. And then I cried my eyes out.
That's right.
That's
yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah.
Because I had called all of my writers and my producers and my directors saying like, wherever you go, you got a background person that needs to like be, you know, whatever. Let me know. I want to follow the storytelling that group of people is doing. And I will show up wherever they need me to show up. And they were all like, yes, we love you, but kind of hemming and hawing. And I couldn't figure out why, but it was because Vince had told them they're going to do something with me.
Well, then do you start? Have you started?
I have not started.
You seen a syllable yet?
I've
on
seen
a page.
Two scripts.
Mm-hmm.
Let's FaceTime Vince right now and get some details.
Let's do it. I'm sure he'll spill it.
I've never seen anything like it in my life. I've never done anything like it in my life.
FaceTime Vince, you mean?
Yes. Okay. We're going to TikTok, right? Guys, let's make a TikTok.
Let's all TikTok.
I was laughing my head off when you said, I've been on sets where I'm the oldest person there, and they're like, I'm like, Are we TikToking? Oh, let's TikTok.
Oh, my God. I love it.
No idea.
Well, Linoleum in select theaters right now. You, Ray Seahorn, have earned, in my mind, the right of seeing anything that you're in.
Oh.
Fact.
Wow.
You are awesome.
I'm going to cry again. Thank you.
Anything that you were in, and Linoleum is that. And I can't wait till what you're doing with Vince and everything else.
Thank you very much.
We have Ray of Seahorn here on the Rich Eisen Show. Thank you for being here, Ray. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Check her out at Ray Seahorn on Twitter and Instagram and in select theaters in Linoleum. We're back to continue our show in just a moment. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network on the Roku Channel live stream. Sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger is the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. I love doing the show. I love doing it with you. I want to thank all the fans who might not be Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad fans for, you know, bearing with us in that respect. And because we talk here about what's of interest to all of us here, and that show and is of complete interest to us. And I am so thrilled that we go deep, man. When we get somebody on from Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul, we go deep in it. Because it's a deep show, and I just love her. She's incredible. Ray Seahorn. I mean, I know you're not, you didn't really watch Better Call Saul, right, TJ?
Yeah, the thing is, believe it or not, I'm way behind. I'm on the final season, though, so I've got like seven episodes.
I don't think we really.
You didn't really, because
it's so deep and it's, you know, it's difficult to
spoil. I tried to turn my brain
it.
Off when I knew stuff was coming up. I kind of just like.
Just like Del Tufo. You understand. You pull a Del Tufo.
But yeah, she, you know, I started watching her on a Whitney Cummings sitcom a few years ago, and she was definitely like, you're like, this woman is good. And then that's when she, right after that, Better Call Saul was the next thing, and she's amazing.
Okay, she's seen two scripts. We're getting closer.
Rather, automatically in.
So was apparently Apple, you know? I mean.
Done. Could you not be?
So Vince Gilligan walks in. I got this idea.
Done.
Over. Sold. We don't care.
Sold. I got an idea. Here's a checkbook.
Who do you need?
Who's sold. There? Brilliant. What must that feel like to sell something in the room like that?
Not sure.
In this town?
Unclear.
Get out of here.
I mean, I sold a book once, but that was also in New York, not here. So
yeah. here's what we got. There's his bear. And it loves cocaine.
Really?
Sold.
You don't say.
I love how you start laughing about
it. There's a bear eating cocaine and just slaughtering
people. Wait till Susie gives you her 2 cents on cocaine bear tomorrow.
Can't wait. We'll be about 3 months in.
Will you ask her this when she sits in here tomorrow and you have a moment?
Of course, write this down.
How does she not jump?
Oh, she didn't?
Are you a jumper in movies when something happens?
I don't watch those movies.
You don't flinch?
Yeah, he doesn't.
Come
like
on.
But I don't like them.
But you've seen some.
I jump.
You
jump.
Right. Yeah. Did you jump? Yeah. Are you a jumper?
I don't think I jumped at this one. But
you didn't jump in any of these moments? Come on,
but
man.
There were some times like, ooh.
Right.
I didn't really jump.
No, I jump. She doesn't flinch.
Steely nerved.
Doesn't move.
Does she also do puzzles with no pictures?
That is psychotic.
That is psychotic.
What is the point?
Puzzles with no pictures.
You're just literally trying to fit them together. There's no basis to go on.
What is that? The color blue. 1,000 pieces.
Puzzles with no pictures.
Go.
Also, the current Packers quarterback situation.
Hey, look at you just weaving.
It's a tapestry every day here. And that's why, again, I appreciate the Roku channel saying, go deep onto pop culture. Go for it. And I appreciate the Rich Eisen Show terrestrial radio affiliates, you know, having this show and providing the pop culture conversation. Sports is that world. So it was great with Ray coming up in hour number three. Matt Barr of the CW show Walker Independence. He'll be here. He's a diehard Dallas fan. But we come back on this show, Sean Payton spoke and Josh McDaniels spoke. We're back to the world of the combine when we come back. Joe Douglas is speaking of the Jets.
J-A-D-S.
Another quarterback situation that's a puzzle with no pictures.
What's better, Rich? Fantastic or terrific?
Oh,
fantastic. 85%.
Okay.
Who's the Bears starting quarterback week one? 92%.
Justin Fields.
Justin Fields.
They got to get a market somehow going. If DJ, you heard what he said. He's like, yeah, Bryce Young's just not a fit for Chicago. Everybody's going to know that. So that kind of hurts him.
Then we go Stroud. It's suddenly Stroud's the guy now.
Push him up. Push him up. Could be either of them.
He's like a Fields clone. They're the same height, the same weight. They went to the same school.
And guys, we're just doing due diligence.
Yeah,
that's all we're doing. This diligence and it's due. That's what we're doing. D-O-I-N-G.
By the way, the fact that you were the first one who used that phrase,
yes,
in conjunction with this,
been around the block
3 weeks ago, and now you know the GM saying due diligence, the coach's due diligence.
This just in. There's an NFL. It has a block. I've been around it. It's my 18th combine. I'm going to Indianapolis for an 18th time.
Do you have your own booth at St. Elmo's?
No, because I'm not a shrimp cocktail guy. That's also
insane.
Breaking news. I'm not. It's not insane.
Ugh.
It's not.
Everyone loves shrimp cocktails.
Honestly, you're going to find me in the Steak and Shake more often than not.
Ooh.
You love Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now get to know her on Give Them Lala.
With her assistant, Jess.
L.A., it can become suffocating. Did something happen where you felt like, I have to get out of here? Or do you just think it just happens sometimes?
I think it just happens, but also just everything going on in my personal life. Like, I want to get on this mic and be like, this is what I've been dealing with for 14 months.
Give Them Lala, wherever you listen.